On this 10th day of October 2011 in San Diego, we're reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We are in Chapter 4, Transcendental Knowledge, Text 34. Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya Upadekshyanti te jnanam. Jnaninas tatpadarshinah. Translation. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. Purport. The path of spiritual realization is undoubtedly difficult. The Lord therefore advises us to approach a bona fide spiritual master in the line of disciplic succession from the Lord himself. No one can be a bona fide spiritual master without following this principle of disciplic succession. The Lord is the original spiritual master, and a person in the disciplic succession can convey the message of the Lord as it is to his disciple. No one can be spiritually realized by manufacturing his own process, as is the fashion of the foolish pretenders. The Bhagavatam 6.3.19 says, Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. The path of religion is directly enunciated by the Lord. Therefore, mental speculation or dry arguments cannot help lead one to the right path. Nor by independent study of books of knowledge can one progress in spiritual life. One has to approach a bona fide spiritual master to receive the knowledge. Such a spiritual master should be accepted in full surrender, and one should serve the spiritual master like a menial servant, without false prestige. Satisfaction of the self-realized spiritual master is the secret of advancement in spiritual life. Inquiries and submission constitute the proper combination for spiritual understanding. Unless there is submission and service, inquiries from the learned spiritual master will not be effective. One must be able to pass the test of the spiritual master, and when he sees the genuine desire of the disciple, he automatically blesses the disciple with genuine spiritual understanding. In this verse, both blind following and absurd inquiries are condemned. Not only should one hear submissively from the spiritual master, but one must also get a clear understanding from him in submission and service and inquiries. A bona fide spiritual master is by nature very kind toward the disciple. Therefore, when the student is submissive and is always ready to render service, the reciprocation of knowledge and inquiries becomes perfect. Om Jnana Smarandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmidatam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes. With the torchlight of knowledge, I offer my humble obeisance unto him and to all members of Sri Parampara. So, Bhakti Yoga, Krishna consciousness, is by nature a personal process. Everything is personal. The effort of the modern philosophers or scientific establishment, academia, tends to analyze everything into parts until finally when you break everything down, ultimately personality disappears. If you study modern psychology or psychiatry or neuroscience, you'll find that they ultimately believe and propagate throughout society that consciousness is a result of brain activity. And brain activity has to do with neurons and chemistry and so forth. And when you finally analyze the whole thing, there's no person there. There's just matter interacting. And so, but Krishna consciousness or the Vedic understanding as presented in Bhagavad Gita is just the opposite. It's just the opposite. Ultimately, everything is a person or is related to a person. There's nothing that's impersonal. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartate, that I am the source of everything, everything emanated from me. Now, Krishna's a person. He has a form, he has a personality, he has a name, he has activities, everything we have. So, and if everything emanated from a person, then everything is personal in the sense there's a personal touch to it. Nothing is accidental. Things which look inanimate, well, we learn from the Bhagavad Gita that in every atom, there's a manifestation of the Supreme Person. Everything is organized that way. Just like if you find a house or you find a watch on the ground, right? Now a child will think, oh, look at that. There's a flower, there's a rock, and there's a watch. And they have they're equivalent in the sense that there's they just happen to be there. But an intelligent person will know that so much thought went into this watch, care, attention, applied intelligence went into creating this watch. It's very organized. So at every step of the process, there is personality. When we chant Hare Krishna mantra, when we chant any of our prayers, prayer implies there's a person at the other end. Right? The Bhagavad Gita, who is Bhagavad? What is Bhagavad? A person. Bhagavan is a person with all the opulences. You'll find personality everywhere. So the same holds true at every significant step of the process of devotional service. And this critical verse that Krishna is giving us here, he's just described different kinds of sacrifice that one can perform for purification. Purification means purifying oneself of one's burden and history of karma. We're being impelled by activities we've performed in previous lives. This is the basic one of the basic understandings of the philosophy. The soul is eternal. We were never born. Okay, what happened, before? Then where were we before we were born? We were in this life. All we can remember, I can't remember past like about 5 years, 6 years old. But we know we were there. And we know from Bhagavad Gita that we were there in previous life. So what happened? You know, have we carried anything forward? We know we carry so much forward in this life. If you happen there's a disease you can get in childhood that damages your heart, and for the rest of your life you'll have heart problems. What is it? Something fever?
Rheumatic
fever or something? You know, if you happen to have an accident or whatever, you know, and break your leg in such a way that you'll be limping the rest of your life. We know that whatever you do, or positively, you get a good education, then that affects you the rest of your life. If you get addicted to some drug and damage yourself, then that affects you the rest of your life. So what we do now affects the future. And what we did in the past affects the now. So everything that we have, whatever body we're born into, our personal beauty, intelligence, all of these things are a result of previous activities. Now, we're kind of carrying forward these things. It's described as kind of an unfolding process. Some of the karma has already been experienced, good or bad. Some is yet to be experienced. And what we're doing right now is planting new karmic seeds. And in this way, the process goes round and round and round from this time immemorial. But the Bhagavad Gita is telling us this is not good. We have another life beyond this birth and death life, beyond this imprisonment within samsara, or the life of birth and death. So one of the ways that Krishna is explaining here how you can free yourself of that burden of karma is through the process of jagya. Jagya is sacrifice. It means that you give up something or you perform some austerity that's has the effect of releasing you from karmic bondage and not incurring any new karma. So there's all different kinds of jagyas he's just described. Sacrifice of, here's like text 29 for example. Yogis are inclined to the process of breath restraint to remain in trance, practice by offering the movement of the outgoing breath into the incoming. It's a kind of sacrifice. Incoming into the outgoing, thus at last remain in trance, stopping all breathing. Others curtailing the eating process offer outgoing breath into itself as a sacrifice. This is a subtle, kind of esoteric thing. But they all have their effects. Now it's a science, it's a subtle science. So he's saying here, in this present verse, if you want to know them, tat begins with the word tat, that knowledge of different sacrifices, then you have to approach someone who has seen the truth. Tattvadarshi. Tattvadarshi. That means that we haven't seen this truth this subtle truth, this esoteric, mystical, you know, invisible truth of what's going on behind the scenes. We need someone who is realized. That's the key. And how to approach? Panipatena, paribrashnena, and sevya. This is the formula Prabhupada repeats several times in his purport. With surrender, inquisitiveness, questions, and service. Service. So, why is that? Because those open up the kind of the floodgates of the knowledge. This is the means by which the secret knowledge can be accessed. It's not simply a matter of reading the books. Prabhupada mentions that. The knowledge is available here in Bhagavad Gita. Srila Prabhupada has made it available. I remember when I was much younger, I would go to the library or bookstore, and I would see books of knowledge. You know, there was the Upanishads over there. There was this book of Buddhism over there. And Bhagavad Gita, little penguin edition, famous, has been extant for many years. I read these things, you know. I had no idea what to do, though. They all had their different formulas, a different language, you know. Different. I tried this, tried that. I didn't really make any progress. You need to have a guide. It is a path, a bhakti marga. And it's a narrow path. It's easy to get off the path. It's easy to become confused. Because we're dealing with things that are beyond our immediate ken, grasp of our senses. And so this system has been set up by Krishna. This is called the cyclic succession. Now, there's a beginning. There's a beginning. The beginning is always Krishna. This is not the only bona fide cyclic succession called the parampara. There are different paramparas beginning with Krishna in which the knowledge has been handed down carefully from guru to disciple and is available today. There is the Brahma Sampradaya. Brahma was the original student of Krishna. He was enlightened in the heart because there was no one else, you know. He was enlightened in the heart and then he realized the knowledge and he spoke the Brahma Samhita. In the Brahma Samhita, the song of Brahma, the first words, Ishvara Parama Krishna. He's realized that the Supreme God is Krishna. Not some impersonal thing, not some old man with a beard, you know, is Krishna. He's the beginning of everything. He's the cause of all causes. And then he sung his Sanghita, his song, describing the spiritual world. And it's a little Srimad Bhagavatam in summary. Who is Shiva? Who is Brahma? Who is Durga? What is this material world? What's going on in the spiritual world? They're all there in one, you know, little summary verses. He had a revelation. So now he's in knowledge. He passes it on to his son, Narada. Narada Muni. Narada Muni in turn passes on to Vyasadeva. And Vyasadeva comes down all the way to the present day. In a succession. So, now one of the things that this process, pranipatena, these surrender, inquiries and service does, is that it attacks the main problem that we have, the main cause of our bondage in this world, is called the false ego, our sense of false pride. In other words, we're proud, but we don't have anything to be proud of. You know, we're helplessly bobbing like little corks, you know, on the ocean of birth and death, and we're thinking that we can figure it out. I mean, everyone has a plan out there, somehow, how they're going to combat, you know, the difficulties of this material world, how they'll find some place of security and happiness in this world by their own means. You know, but we continually fail birth after birth. There's no way of finding that place of security here. So the first thing we have to come up with, the conclusion we have to reach is that we can't figure it out. Just think of how the Bhagavad Gita came to be spoken. Arjuna was faced with a serious problem. Everything in the whole Mahabharata had led to this point, the war, right, for succession, in which Dharma personified in the person of Yudhishthira would be reinstated in his proper place. The kingdom had been stolen by the Kurus, right? So now, and Arjuna was a key member. He was the chief fighter on the good guy's side, right? Everything was arrayed. The whole battle is ready. And suddenly he gets cold feet. Why? Because his friends, his guru, his relatives are on the other side. It's not just some impersonal army out there. It's, again, persons. And in fact, it was an internecine war because they were also part of the larger Kuru dynasty, if you study it. So suddenly, he can't do what he's supposed to do. He's in a dilemma. So he tries to argue it on himself. The first chapter, I'm going to go. I'm going to leave. I'm going to become a beggar. Because if we perform this battle, we kill all these men, the women will become unprotected. There'll be unwanted progeny, you know, and create havoc in society. You know, plus I won't have to kill my relatives if I leave. So it's a win-win. You know? But actually, it was a lose-lose. And Krishna explained to him, no, you know, and he showed in the 11th chapter how they're already killed because I want them such. You know, this is my plan. You can't foil it. You simply have to take part. Nimitta matram bhavasavyasat. You be my agent. And ultimately, it's a question of dharma, what is right, as the supreme good. That's the whole question of Mahabharata. What is the right thing to do? You know, very concerned about that. People aren't concerned today, and that's why they're living animalistic lives. Dharma inahina pashabhisamana. So, but dharma is of great concern here. The very first word, dharma kshetra, it begins with dharma and ends with dharma. Sarva dharma paritya. The ultimate dharma is surrender to Krishna. So Arjuna, what did Arjuna do? Now being a great devotee and intelligent, he gave up his attempt to figure it out himself. And then he approached Krishna, not as a friend, but as a disciple. Karpan nidosho pahata svabhava. And he recognized, I'm overwhelmed with miserly weakness. I'm confused. I don't know what is right. Yukshe eksyan nishtitam bruhitanma. You now tell me how I can achieve the ultimate good. Not only for myself, but for everyone. Shishya steham. I'm now your shishya. No more your sakha, your friend. I'm now your disciple. Please instruct me. I'm surrendered. Prapanna. Pranipatena is the same word. So the difference between the shishya and the friend is that the shishya, the very word shishya, is based on this root word shash, which means to be controlled. There's two other words we know from this base, shastra and shastra. Notice the importance of the long A. It changes the whole meaning. Shastra means weapon, shastra means book. But in all cases, shishya, shastra, and shastra, one agrees to be, one is controlled, either by force, by the weapon, by intelligence through the book, or by surrender as a disciple. So now Arjuna is no longer arguing with Krishna, and Krishna immediately calls him a fool, you know, in a polite kind of way. You're speaking learned words, but you're lamenting what is not worthy of grief, the body as opposed to the soul. And then we're off and running in the Bhagavad Gita. So the same system is being spoken of here. One has to surrender. Stop. You can ask questions, but there has to be accompanied with service. Recognizing service means you recognize the superiority of the served. And then the knowledge can actually flow. Otherwise, it doesn't work that way. And we see in the schools, the universities, they're reading the Bhagavad Gita. But it's being presented by someone who isn't self-realized. And the attitude of the students is, oh, how can I get a good grade? Not how can I become self-realized? So even so, the same words are here. You know, and Krishna says, you know, I mean, the Sanskrit is not that difficult to understand. Surrender unto me, you'll get beyond birth and death. They're not surrendering unless they get Bhagavad Gita as it is and come in contact with a genuine guru in the form of Prabhupada's purports. Then they may become curious and you know, get on the devotional path. The whole difference is the presence of the spiritual master and the relationship that we develop with him. Now, there are different kinds of spiritual masters, a guru. Guru means teacher, and guru means heavy. So someone who's heavy with knowledge, that's what it counts, can be a guru. So the two main different kinds of gurus are the Diksha guru and the Shiksha guru. Now, the Shiksha means instruction, one who is instructing. And Diksha means one who formally gives initiation. They're not mutually exclusive. Generally, one who gives a lot of shiksha becomes a diksha. That was the process with Srila Prabhupada. He was giving all the shiksha, and those who were serious became his disciples. But he became the main shiksha guru. Shiksha guru simply means that you know the process as it is, and you're willing to give it. You see? but there are qualifications. One has to be, the purer one is in one's activities and realization, then the more potent will be the message. Krishna, there's other verses describing the qualifications of the guru. Prabhupada would often quote, tad vijnanatam so guru eva bhagachit samit pani shotriyam brahmanishtam. This is a verse from the Upanishads, that tad vijnanatam, if you are interested in becoming realized, getting realized knowledge, not just information that you can get in any bookstore, but if you want vijnanatam, see the difference between gyan and vijnan, very important, then you must go to a guru, a qualified guru. Sagurum eva abhigacchet. Abhigacchet, Prabhupada pointed. This is an imperative form of the word. There's no of going. You must go. So what's the qualifications? Tadvig is abhigacchet. Samit pani shrotriyam brahmanishtam. Now the attitude of going samit pani means with firewood in your hand. That's kind of the traditional way in which the disciples would serve the guru. It would be an ashram and a certain number of children growing up, boys generally. And they would perform menial service. And it's the traditional menial service, go get the firewood. Even Krishna did it, didn't he? In Sandipani Muni's ashram, he went, and then by his arrangement, a storm came up, right? They were out all night with Sudama, Vipra, that was later recounted. So Krishna showed the way. And so did Lord Chaitanya in his relation to Ishwara Puri. So at Samitpani, that's Shrotriyam Brahmanishtam. But the guru must be Shrotriyam. He has to have heard his own spiritual master, be realized, and Brahmanishtam, fixed in Brahman, fixed in the position transcendental to the modes of nature. And those qualities are explained in the 14th chapter. Basically, the qualities of a sadhu that are listed in the 25th chapter of the third canto. Tatikshava karunika suridak sarvadehinam ajata shatra vakshanta sada vakshada bhushana mayanam nena bhavane buktim kurvanta yedvidam. So he's describing tolerant, merciful, the friend of all, one-pointed in devotion to Krishna, ready to give up anything for the service of Krishna, always absorbed in hearing and chanting, basically the qualities of an acharya. Charya has three basic qualities given in the Shastra. Knows the books, knows the science, lives according to it, and teaches. Is be willing to teach. And in the first verse of the Upadeshamrita, Srila Rupa Goswami gives this very, very simple kind of down-home qualification. You can see, Vacho vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jiva vegam, rupasta vegam. Etan vegan yovisha hetan dhira sarvama piman pritiving sa shishya. There was shishya again. So he says there are certain pushings of the mind, and of the vacha, the urges of the speech, of the mind, and anger. If one can tolerate them, vishaheta dhira. If one is dhira, equipoised, even when these are present. And also physically, the tongue, belly, sex drive. If that's also under control, you can see this person is realized. It's almost extremely practical. All these, the other so-called masters who come, who are not devotees, who are not really realized, eventually they show they can't control that. There's something, or they're making money. They're having some affairs with their disciples. Eventually, it comes out that they're not fully, that these things cannot be controlled. And also, Srila Prabhupada showed by his life how tolerant he was, and how indifferent to material aggregation. Bhadrin Ryan personally witnessed, at a certain point in Srila Prabhupada's 12 years between 1965 and 77 when he left the planet or passed away. It was amazing how the movement grew, and after a while he had thousands of devotees willing to do anything for him, and literally millions of dollars at his command. And so at a certain point, they purchased a very opulent temple in Detroit. It had been a mansion, the Fisher Mansion. And Srila Prabhupada just could have bought it, and lived there. You know? It would have been, you know, very easy to stay. Or he could have stayed in Hawaii. He had, you know, anywhere. But he didn't. He arranged for the purchase with Ambarish, Alfred Ford, and Lake Ashimonti. And then he went on, traveling, at great, you know, difficulty. A man his age, in late 70s, of ill health, you know, traveling constantly in an airplane. You know how difficult it is? I take one flight in an airplane, and I need a day to recover. And it messes you up, you know, your life airs. If you fly a lot, anyone who knows. But he was constantly flying at an advanced age. And, you know, and not at all enjoying the accoutrements that were available. So this is a very important verse. Now, in this purport, probably, you know, he says, no one can manufacture his own process. This also goes on a lot. Even if someone knows the serious process of bhakti yoga, it's often, you know, you often may think, well, no one will take that. You know, when Prabhupada introduced Krishna consciousness to America in the middle of New York City, in the middle of the, you know, the 60s, who could possibly think that you could come and start a movement and an irreducible basis of it was four regulative principles? In the middle of the sexual revolution and the drug craze and all this stuff, you said, no illicit sex, no gambling, no intoxication, no meat eating. You know? Anyone who was thinking, well, how can I really make it grow? Okay, we'll have two. We'll have two of those regs. We'll start with two, work up to four. No meat eating, no gambling. Okay, we'll make it easy. And then when you advance so much, then you can have the other two. No, he just started with the four, you see? Because as he says here, Dharma to Saksha Bhagavad Punitam, you cannot manufacture your own process. The general tendency is to, if your motive is to become, you know, very popular and start a movement and so forth, then you're going to distort things. This has happened throughout religious history. What do you think the Reformation was? You know, I mean that was King Henry, I think. Right? Because he wanted to divorce his wife and have another wife. And the heck with that Pope, you know, start a new religion. That's how it happens. You know, so there you now you have two branches, right? It doesn't work that way. Dharma is dharma. Dharma to sakshat bhagavat pranitam. Very important line. It means that only Krishna can enunciate dharma. Only God can enunciate it. And if you don't know what he says, then you can't say you're practicing religion. You can't start your own thing. It has to go all the way back. So that's what Bhagavad Gita is all about. It's Krishna speaking here. You know, so there's absolutely no compromise. What did we just read? You know, what is it? Yadvicha labhasantushto. You know, those whose activities are completely free from any motivation of material desire. This is a sign of knowledge. Who's even talking about that? No, you bring religion into the service of your material desire. Practice this religion and you'll be prosperous and happy in this world, you know. Isn't it? Why do people go to church? But this is completely separate from that. This Bhagavad Gita, the Srimad Bhagavatam, all of the books and the lifestyles and the saints, they're leading that lifestyle completely free of material desire. How can you live like that? The only way to live like that is if you're getting your happiness, your joy from another source, not sense gratification. And that source is the service of the Supreme, the service of Krishna. There has to be a happiness in that very service, selflessness, by how one can be completely free from any tinge of material desire. And that's exactly what, you know, is going. So that you can't fudge that. It's an absolute principle. You know, that's what we aim for. We may not achieve it, but we have to keep that ideal as the absolute. And it's not some, you know, why? Because otherwise, if you have a tinge of material desire, you have to come back and suffer. So this is a process leading to absolute perfection. You know, there's no sellout here. There's no fudging the goal or the process. So that's dharma to saksha bhagavan. The mental space and dryer cannot help one to the right path. You can't figure it out on your own. It has to be received knowledge. There's different ways of knowing. The main way that we know in Western culture is through the scientific process. It's called the ascending process. We observe, with our eyes and our instruments that expand our ability to know. We build on so much knowledge of others who have used the same process. Think of what the automobile industry, right? It's all, they're all building on the knowledge. They don't have to reinvent the wheel or the car, right? They already have the knowledge, and they just tweak it a little bit. And what do they have now? I have a 2005 car, but since then, I used to have a 1993. I was perfectly happy with it until it stopped running. Now I got a new car, but I don't have that nice feature where you back up and it warns you when you a little radar thing, where you can't beat it. So that's just a feature that they added on. So they keep building. You see, they keep building on previous material knowledge, but it has the same source. They figured it out. They figured out how the internal combustion engine. Oh, there's too much greenhouse gases. Now we'll figure it out another way. We can do it through electricity. Okay. Now we'll sell a million of those cars. But it's the same source. In other words, they're not getting any closer to self-realization. They're just building a better car for you to enjoy, right? And all material knowledge is like that. It's all, they're building this great edifice. But at the root of it is our ability to just look at this world and figure it out on our own. That doesn't get you one inch closer to that which is beyond the senses and beyond the mind. You see the problem. We're stuck. We're bound up in our self-created cage, that's limited by our ability to know with these limited senses and mind. So if we're trying to transcend that, break out of that trap, we need help from outside. That's called the descending process. And therefore, we need realized souls who are giving us knowledge exactly as Krishna gave it to us. And in a way, this is the key, in a way that we can understand and respond to. The simple act of translating this Sanskrit into English was a tremendous act of compassion and mercy. Because it broke it out of this, if all we had were these funny letters here called Devanagari, we'd never be devotees. Srila Prabhupada performed that wonderful service. Translators are often, revolutionaries. And Srila Prabhupada did that. And from the English into so many other languages, making it accessible and in terms that we can understand. So the language can be changed, but the meaning has to be the same. And that's what Prabhupada did. Okay, any questions on this verse, importance of the spiritual master, and how to approach it? All right, let's go on. Yagyatvana punar moham. Evam yasasi pandava yena bhutani sheshani chakshasyatman hitomayi. Having obtained real knowledge from a self-realized soul, you will never fall again into such illusion. For by this knowledge you will see that all living beings are but part of the Supreme, or in other words, that they are mine. Purport. The result of receiving knowledge from a self-realized soul, or one who knows things as they are, is learning that all living beings are parts and parcels of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna. The sense of an existence separate from Krishna is called maya. Ma, not ya, this. Some think that we have nothing to do with Krishna, that Krishna is only a great historical personality, and that the Absolute is the impersonal Brahman. Factually, as it is stated in the Bhagavad Gita, this impersonal Brahman is the personal effulgence of Krishna. Krishna, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the cause of everything. In the Brahma Samhita, it is clearly stated that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the cause of all causes. Even the millions of incarnations are only his different expansions. Similarly, the living entities are also expansions of Krishna. The Mayavadi philosophers wrongly think that Krishna loses his own separate existence in his many expansions. This thought is material in nature. We have experience in the material world that a thing, when fragmentally distributed, loses its own original identity. But the Mayavadi philosophers fail to understand that absolute means that 1 + 1 is equal to 1, and that 1 - 1 is also equal to 1. This is the case in the absolute world. For one of sufficient knowledge in the absolute science, we are now covered with illusion, and therefore we think that we are separate from Krishna. Although we are separated parts of Krishna, we are nevertheless not different from him. The bodily difference of the living entities is maya, or not actual fact. We are all meant to satisfy Krishna. By maya alone, Arjun thought that the temporary bodily relationship with his kinsmen was more important than his eternal spiritual relationship with Krishna. The whole teaching of the Gita is targeted toward this end, that a living being, as Krishna's eternal servitor, cannot be separated from Krishna, and his sense of being an identity apart from Krishna is called maya. The living entities, as separate parts and parcels of the Supreme, have a purpose to fulfill. Having forgotten that purpose since time immemorial, they are situated in different bodies as men, animals, demigods, etc. Such bodily differences arise from forgetfulness of the transcendental service of the Lord. But when one is engaged in transcendental service through Krishna consciousness, one becomes at once liberated from this illusion. One can acquire such pure knowledge only from the bona fide spiritual master and thereby avoid the delusion that the living entity is equal to Krishna. Perfect knowledge is that the supreme soul, Krishna, is the supreme shelter for all living entities, and giving up such shelter, the living entities are deluded by the material energy, imagining themselves to have a separate identity. Thus, under different standards of material identity, they become forgetful of Krishna. When, however, such deluded living entities become situated in Krishna consciousness, it is to be understood that they are on the path of liberation, as confirmed in the Bhagavatam 2.10.6, Mukti Hitpanyata Rupam Swarupena Vyavastitihi. Liberation means to be situated in one's constitutional position as an eternal servitor of Krishna, Krishna consciousness. So this inconceivable oneness and difference is a central feature of the philosophy here. Lord Chaitanya, he codified it in his little phrase worth memorizing, achintya bheda bheda tattva. Achintya bheda bheda tattva. Literally means inconceivably, separate and one at the same time. We as living entities are separate from Krishna. We have our separate identity. Although Prabhupada is emphasizing the oneness here because Krishna does. But we're individuals eternally, as Krishna says, anatve vaham jato nasam natvam ne me janadipa. The beginning of his teachings, 2.12, he says, never did I not exist, nor you, nor all these fighters here. And in the future we shall continue to exist as individuals. So we're separate. But also abheda. We're also one with Krishna. So how we are one with and separate with Krishna at the same time, that's an essential part of the understanding, of the basis of the understanding, by which we can actually engage in devotional service. So there are so many analogies given. One is the sun and the sunshine, right? The sun and the sunshine. You've heard it 100 times before. But it's worth thinking about it. If there's no sun, there's obviously no sunshine, right? But fortunately, there is sun, and there is a sunshine. So how do we know that there's a sun? Well, when the sun comes up in the sky, I don't see the sun, but I see its light out there, right? Suddenly the sky is light, is coming in. I know that the sun is there. So the sunshine, which I'm seeing reflections of, that's evidence of the sun. There's no meaning to sunshine without the sun. And the sun really, we wouldn't even know about it if it wasn't for sunshine. So the sun is very hot and very light. So far, it's so hot and light, hot that it has to stay 93 million miles away. But the sunshine also has heat and light, you see. So the sunshine has the qualities of the sun in minute degree. Similarly, we are Krishna's energy. He says, right, para prakriti. Seventh chapter. I forget the number of the verse. So aside from this material energy, which is not alive, it's a different kind of energy, although it's connected to Krishna, there is a para prakriti. This is apara, means not transcendental, and there's a para prakriti, which consists of the jivas, us. And it uses the word dharyate jagat. Now, dharyate has the same root as the word dharma. And dhari, familiar word, giridhari, radha giridhari. Holding up, you hold up the hill. We're holding up the body. The only reason that it is a body, you know, and stays as such, because we're inside. As soon as we leave, we're dead, right? As souls, we don't die. But the body, no longer the body, crumples to the floor and has to be disposed of somehow. Right? Reverts back into its component parts. So we're holding up, you know, supporting the body, exploiting it, Prabhupada says. So, but the key is we're prakriti, energy. The original Purusha is Krishna. Now, Purusha and prakriti are related. The prakriti is meant to give pleasure to the Purusha. And if so, then the prakriti also enjoys, naturally. You know, that's the natural. But we're pretending to be Purusha. We've taken an artificial position. And that's why in the Bhagavad Gita, we're sometimes the soul is referred to as Purusha. You have to understand the context. In 13th chapter, he says, Purushak prakatisto hi, bhunkte prakati janganan. That the living entity is by nature energy of Krishna, acting like a Purusha within the material energy, associates with the modes of nature. And according to how you associate, you make your destiny. You get your birth. If you like to take drugs, if you can't, you know, sit still and do this, it says, okay, it's too much. You know. And then your mind is too disturbed, then you can go. You know, and then it doesn't even become interesting. You've associated with the mode of ignorance so much, then that's you're infected with that. And that you've made your bed and you'll sleep in it. A lot of suffering, you know. So that we're associated. We have a freedom to associate. So, but the key point in this verse is that we are within Krishna. Everything is within Krishna. Krishna is within everything. This is also a teaching of the Brahma Samhita. How are we within Krishna? Because it's all His energy. You see, everything. Now this is the oneness. This is seeing the oneness of everything. You know, this is the transcendental vision. It's wonderful. You see every living being. You don't see according to the skin, the age, even the gender. You know, you see a spirit soul in a different kind of car. Big deal. You know, you're going to start doing, someone's driving a Cadillac, someone's driving a SUV, you know, or a jalopy. So what? You know, they're persons, right? And that's the most important thing. So the most important thing is that we're all spirit souls, and the spiritualist, the Krishna conscious person sees that, and tries to reawaken the Krishna consciousness in everybody. That's what's so wonderful. I can go anywhere in the world now, or any of us, you know, and find the Hare Krishna temple or the little center. Says, "Oh, Hare Krishna, Babu," you know, I'm in the middle of Siberia somewhere. He says, "Hare Bol." "Can I stay over? I'll do a little service. I'll clean the pots." "Oh, yes, Babu, come on." Of course, you know, especially you know, some elder like me, you know. So I didn't do anything. But what Prabhupada did it. So everywhere they see, "Oh, yeah, you're a servant of Krishna." They don't care where you're from, Italy, Germany, America, South America. So that's the oneness. Now, the mode of passion, you know, the ignorant see all the differences. Oh, different race, different language, different place of birth. Different socioeconomic strata, and they make distinctions. I don't want to associate with that person. That person, you see that? That's ignorance. So here, when you understand Krishna consciousness, you won't be illusioned again like you are now. Arjuna was thinking, "Oh, these are my relatives. I can't, you know, kill them on Krishna's order for the greater good, because I have this skin relationship." Now, ultimately, that has to be given up. So he says, "Napuna moham yasasibhan yena bhutani asheshani drukshishatman yatomi." You will see that they're all within me, that everyone is related to me intimately. That's the key vision, the oneness. Now, where's the difference? Remember, it's abheda and bheda. So the abheda is that we're all Krishna servants. And the difference is that we all have our individual roles to play in Krishna's service. It's like a great orchestra. Have you ever played in an orchestra? I used to play in an orchestra. You know, it wasn't a great orchestra, but you know, when you're all playing together, you're making music together. You know, And everybody has his role to play in a great concert. And then everyone benefits from that. One person's out of tune, you know, sawing away on the violin, and you know. That's just like it is in the spiritual world. We were out of tune. We got kicked out of the orchestra till we learned to play in tune. And but we come into and the idea that now Krishna, because he's unlimited, this is something we have to, you know, we have to conceive of. It's a little difficult. He can have a personal relationship with each one of us. Every single living entity, the billions and trillions and countless quadrillions of them, has an individual personal relationship with Krishna. And we all have our little role to play in Krishna's leela. That's the wonderful thing. You don't lose anything. We're thinking we'll lose something. Oh, I'm giving up my independence. I'm giving up this, giving up. But we don't have any independence. That is an illusion. We're completely dependent already. Your very breath, the next beat of your heart, you're depending on nature, which is depending on Krishna. He's already giving it. But one is we're doing it in an ignorant way, you know, pretending to be independent when we're actually not. The other is we recognize our dependence on the personality of Krishna. And we relate to him in a personal way, learning how to do it from the spiritual master, from the books, so that we realize our spiritual identity. This verse Prabhupada quotes here at the end, muktir hitvanyata rupam sorupene vivasati. Notice the word rupa appears twice in this little phrase. So mukti means, this is in the 10th chapter, 2nd canto, which is kind of a table of contents. And he says, mukti means giving up other forms, like the ones we have now, which are in our real form, and being situated in swarup. And what is the swarup? Jivera swarupoi krishnera nityadas. Lord Chaitanya declares the swarup of every living entity is to be an eternal servant of Krishna. And in that identity as servant of Krishna, there's unlimited varieties, ways in which you can serve. It's not limited, because Krishna is unlimited. Any questions or comments? We're running out of time. Very nice verse. Okay. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.